Support for this podcast comes from Frito-Lay and the 2023 Snack Bracket Championship. The Frito-Lay Snack Challenge is underway, and fans are voting on their favorite snacks to crown champion. We're talking about primetime matchups between the best 64 snacks in the land. Will Ruffles Ridges reign supreme? Can Doritos defend their dynasty? Or will Smart Food use their smarts for a surprise upset? Only you can decide. Get in on all the action for a chance to win up to $1,000 or a year's worth of snacks. Let your snacks be heard. Just go to FritoLaySnackIt.SBNation.com to vote and enter for a chance to win. No purchase necessary. Sweepstakes ends April 3rd, 2023. Void where prohibited. Year's worth of snacks awarded in the form of 52 coupons, each good for one bag of chips. See official rules at FritoLaySnackIt.SBNation.com.
Stunned. I think Tyrese Haliburton was stunned, Malika. The league is stunned at this trade. First 10 for three.
Welcome to another edition of the Indie Cornrows Podcast. This is your host, Mark Schindler. As always, if you haven't already, be sure to rate and review us over on Apple Podcasts and Spotify. We want to hear from you and get your feedback. I'm joined by my co-host and colleague, Caitlin Cooper. Caitlin, how are you doing today?
I'm doing well. It once again feels like it's a month since I last talked to you.
How long has it been? Like 2 weeks? It feels longer.
It feels like a while.
This has been the longest summer of my life. I was telling you before we got on, I think I've literally traveled more, and from July 1st to now, I've traveled more than I have in my entire life combined. So it's been an adventure, but it's been a good adventure, so I can't complain. But what are we here to do today?
Today, in the wake of our two-hour July mailbag podcast, the Pacers schedule was officially released yesterday. And we have both, instead of doing like a traditional schedule breakdown pod, we decided that we wanted to each pick our five most intriguing or most anticipated, however we want to look at it, games of the year. And we are going to each power rank them in reverse order.
Oh, we're doing reverse order.
Yeah, I'm going to start with number five. Why? Did you want to start with number one?
No, I just didn't even think about it. That makes sense. Yeah, start with number five. Who do you want to start with?
Okay, so I'll just go ahead with my number five. And my number five is somewhat nebulous because it would not have mattered who they played. I picked opening night. I like
it,
opening night.
Me to it.
Yeah, I like opening night because, you know, it's a hope springs eternal. Anything can happen. Sometimes you get out to a 23-point lead in the third quarter, and that turns out to be the high point of an entire season. Other times, you never know. So they're playing the Wizards. I don't think I really care that much about the Washington Wizards, though. Like, if we look at the first three games of the year, it is a chance that the Pacers are going to get to see Benedict Mathurin up against other guys that they worked out or at least spoke to, since Johnny Davis will be playing in that game. Potentially Jeremy Sochan against the Spurs, Jaden Ivey with Detroit. So that's kind of fun. Soft opening for the Pacers. That's not a really challenging schedule, I don't think, to this point, just looking off of it on paper. Matchup wise, I don't think I'm like super interested in these two teams going up against each other. I did, looking back at last year, I did like the end of one of Tyrese's first games with the Pacers. I remember the little matchup tweak that the Wizards made out of a timeout when they put Denny Avdia on Tyrese, which you would think was like, oh, because, you know, Denny's a really good isolation defender, makes sense to put him on Tyrese, but it was more so that they could switch him because they were running a switch everything defense onto Terry Taylor to prevent Tyrese being able to throw the ball to Terry on the slip. And then when it happened, Terry actually like pinned Denny Avdia under the glass and got the putback layup. And that was one of the better games. So I did like that little chess match because prior to that, Denny Avdia had been kind of like roaming off of Lance, but obviously the pieces are going to be a lot different this year. But sounds like you two were also going to be picking opening night. I mean, in this case, we will have Bradley Beal and Kristaps Porzingis, which the Pacers didn't see the two of them together, potentially Haliburton and Miles playing for the first time together as well. So that's kind of fun.
Yeah, no, I did have the same one. And just to you know, hit out a little bit on what you mentioned as well. Exact same thing for me. I I mean, that opening night really set the tone. Like, I'll never forget being at halftime and texting Tom and being like, this is great. Like, this is the new team. Like, it looks like everything's clicking. And then the second half, it was like, yeah. So obviously, I mean, we have way different expectations for this team. Even like last year, we weren't really sure what to have as expectations for the team because it was just such a wonky year. And I don't know. I'm right there in the same boat. I think I kind of just don't know how entirely to view what this team is until we know A, what the roster is on opening night, and B, how they come out and play.
Yeah, because I think that's a really good point. Because I mean, today they announced the signing of yet another player, Davidis, from Lithuania. I don't exactly know. I think that's a training camp deal, but technically they're at the full 20-man roster at this point in time. In addition to the four guys that they have on the Exhibit 10 deals, and they did not move Daniel Tice. They have not moved Miles Turner. They have not moved Buddy Hield or Goga Batadze. So we don't exactly know if this roster will be exactly the same when the season starts, but right now we're going to go off of it that way. But I did want to reference and say that if people haven't looked at like the full breakdown of the schedule that Nathan does every year, which is really good. He crunches all the numbers, looks at, you know, all the home stands, the road games, and goes month by month, and also looks at the back-to-backs. I like this sentence that he had on the end where he says, quote, all in all, it's hard to look at this schedule and find the more favorable and less favorable stretches due to the uncertainty about what kind of win total the Pacers will be capable of. And I think that kind of summarizes how both of us feel as well. Mm-hmm. I mean, it is, like I said, it's nice to see that they have these three early games against teams that also aren't necessarily projected to be heavily, you know, in the playoff mix. And maybe that lets them get off to a little bit easier start. Cause like last year's start to the schedule was pretty rough. We remember everybody talking about that even at media day where Rick was like, well, you know, we had a tough start with the Mavericks last year, but then we really kicked it into gear over the second half. And, you know, for the Pacers that never exactly materialized, obviously, but, was that your number five as well?
That was my number five.
I thought we were each going to be picking completely different games, but
I'm
going to let you go and do your number four.
Okay. Number four for me, and this is again like kind of more along the lines of I'm not entirely sure how to view this, but I have the March 24th game against Boston on NBA TV, and I have this is just we don't really know what this team is going to be doing in March. I would be under this, like, I think you and I both have the assumption competitive but losing, like that's kind of our hope for the season based on everything that they've talked about and current direction of the team. So to me, I think a really good test and gauge of whether this team is competitive, but, you know, obviously still on the losing end, is playing a team as good as Boston in the only televised game. I mean, not the only televised, the only nationally televised game this team is going to play in the second half of the season after start 2023 hits. Just given this team's penchant for being absolute dog shit on national TV. I think, like, again, it's not everything, but seeing this team play at least decently and show flashes of what they can be in the future against a reigning title contender, like, that's something that's really, it's not important per se, but to me, it's something that I definitely am going to be taking note of and trying to watch. Like, I don't want to just see them get their brains bashed in, losing by, like, you know, 25. On NBA TV to the Celtics. So I think, like, to me, and especially too with Malcolm playing, who knows if he will actually be playing in that game, but like that's
always up in the air.
I did not mean that to be rude, but like just legitimately, you never know with Malcolm. But yeah, I think that's definitely on my watch list.
I actually really like that game. I didn't even look at it from the perspective that you just did with the NBA TV component. Like, I know that's not the same as ESPN and TNT, but I do think you make a really good point because what you said is accurate. Like, those two games, especially the one they played against the Heat midway through the season last year in Miami, when they were in the massive hole at halftime and basically like the broadcast turned into a podcast just talking over the top of the game. They didn't necessarily rise to the occasion in those particular matchups, and this is an opportunity to showcase themselves. And, you know, they played that game against Boston. You know, Boston was at the end of a very long road trip when the Pacers beat them fairly handedly after the trade deadline, but that was a fun game. And the one that they went up and played in Boston toward the back end of the season when Tyrese was almost perfect and did some stuff against some switches, was a fun game as well. So if they're fully healthy, depending upon who's still on the roster at that point in time, it will be kind of interesting to see too, because, you know, if we look back to last year when they did the two-game miniseries in January against Boston, like that was kind of right on the cusp of when the Celtics started making some of their defensive adjustments in terms of how they were using Robert Williams in the big lineups. And, you know, I'll be fascinated to see who they assign him to, especially now that Jalen Smith has been announced as the starting four. Like, who will they see as the lower usage wing? My guess is Jalen, but, you know, also, like, I think that there is possibility between, you know, having Miles, Jalen, Isaiah Jackson as potentially, you know, the three big rotation, that we might see some Miles and Isaiah Jackson. So just the idea of Robert Williams and Isaiah Jackson both playing the roamer role at the same time is kind of fascinating to me as well. So I support that pick. Good one. Good. And that's not one that I picked. So
I appreciate that. So what is your number four?
I kind of cheated a little bit. I'm going to talk this one through with you and get your opinion. I love the miniseries, as we just said. I'm a big fan of the baseball two-game back-to-backs against teams. I really like watching the adjustments in the second game in particular. So we have three options here. They play three miniseries, the Pacers do. The first one will be on Halloween against Brooklyn. The other one is at kind of towards the end of November, November 21st, against the Magic. And then one against Detroit in March. And my inclination here is I really want to pick the second game against Detroit in March. My only fear is that either team might be in somewhat of a quasi-tanking state, sitting players out. But I really do like the idea of watching them play against Detroit late in the season, because I just think that, you know, Jaden Ivey, Cade Cunningham, Tyrese Halliburton, Benedict Mathurin could be, you know, two fun backcourts to watch go up against each other. And hopefully both Jaden Ivey and Benedict Mathurin, if there is a rookie wall for either of them, are going to be through that, hopefully by that point in time in the season. And because of what happened against Detroit late last year, we know that the offense in the one game tilted incredibly toward Malcolm Brogdon because Tyrese was struggling a little bit against Detroit's switching defense. And then in the other game late in the year against Detroit, Detroit, you know, sat most of their players in the fourth quarter, and the Pacers still ended up losing the game despite like full court pressing. So I know it's going to sound ridiculous to people when they look at what my list of five games is, but I really do think that I'm picking a late March game between two potentially, you know, lottery bound teams, because I wanted to pick the Brooklyn game, but at this point in time, I'm a little bit tired of hearing about the Brooklyn Nets. I don't know how you feel. I don't know if Kevin Durant and Kyrie will still be on the roster or not. So if they're not on the roster, I'm a little bit less interested in that one, other than the fact that we might get to see if TJ Warren is a real basketball player still or not.
That would be
At this point in time, I don't know. He might be a hologram.
I tweeted this out the other day. My dream scenario for the Brooklyn Nets is that Kyrie and KD end up both somewhere where they're happy and they want to play basketball, but TJ Warren is healthy, plays 70 games and averages 23 points per game back in bubble form and makes the All-Star team. Is it going to happen? No, but it would be fantastic if it did. So that is my dream scenario.
I mean, just seeing TJ Warren actually play a basketball game almost led me to pick the second Brooklyn game in October, but I have some other picks from early in the season, and I just felt like I can't have all of my picks in like the first month of the year, despite my anticipation. So that's where I went. Yep, people, I picked the Pistons game from March.
Well, yeah, I mean, I cheated too, and I had the Pistons back-to-back as one of mine, because I think it provides a really interesting thing. Like, obviously, divisions don't really matter anymore, but I do think, you know, you and I talked about this, I think, late in the season, about how honestly, like, the outlook for this team looked worse than any team in the Central Division, if we're being honest. Like, the Bulls had a resurgent year last year. Again, you can question more about what their future is in general. I'm probably higher on that than consensus tends to be, but the Bucks are obviously the Bucks. Giannis is still there. Detroit, as much as they struggled, like, now they have, like we just talked about, Jaden Ivey, Jalen Duren, Cade Cunningham is going to be incredible, already is. Like, I do think that you can legitimately look at this team, and without even mentioning Cleveland. Like, I imagine Cleveland taking another step forward this year. And I think you can legitimately look at that Central Division and be like, okay, well, how do the Pacers actually stack up in terms of looking at what this future is? And I think I'm right there with you. Like, what does it actually mean when we're in the second week of March? What are both these teams doing? But I do think the idea of getting to see these two teams play a back-to-back series is interesting, because like it's obviously, you know, two games doesn't make the entire trajectory for either team, but it will be interesting to see what it looks like.
Yeah, I'm here for the adjustments. That's where I went that way. And I do think that even if they are in somewhat quasi-tanking mode, if you trace the last 2 years with Dwayne Casey, typically, like, you still you still get three decent quarters. And it's not that they, like, just take their foot off the gas. It's more that they just completely sub guys out at the end of the game. Yeah. So there's potential for that, but I still think we could get good basketball, you know, for 3.5 quarters, potentially.
I agree.
Okay, number three.
Yeah, number three for me. That's a good question. Where do I want to go with this one? Number three for me is on New Year's Day. The Indiana Pacers will play the Los Angeles Clippers at 3 p.m. EST on New Year's Day.
I do love the New Year's games. I really do.
And I really wanted to choose this one, just because, like, you know, closing out the new year, you wanna get out on a good note. But also, I felt like the Clippers games last year were some of the most fun games that we had. Like, we had the Isaiah Jackson game against the Clippers. And I think especially too when, you know, you wrote a really great article that I still need to read. I've been so busy the last couple of days, I can't even speak words. But it's, I think it'll just be a really interesting place to note, like a really interesting game to see, like, okay, is this a switch everything defense or trying to do something like that, as we saw a little bit against them in that Clippers game, especially on a team that likes to play that as well. And I mean Paul George is involved. I love Paul George. I'm sure somebody will message us mad that I said that, but sentiment remains.
He's a very aesthetically pleasing player.
Exactly. So
a lot of smoothness there.
That's a game that I look at, I'm like, I'm actually excited to watch that game this year. Like, I want to watch the Clippers play basketball. I want to see how this team plays against them, just because we've seen some fun stuff in the past. So I have that game.
I also have a soft spot for matinee games. Mm-hmm. On a holiday. Like, I'm here for that one. And like you mentioned, like, when they played the first Clipper game last year, and Chris Duarte had, I think, one of his best games of the year in terms of his all-around performance when they were out in LA. The Pacers played a ton of 1-3-1 zone at the end of that game, and it did not go well. Goga had a lot of problems. Nicholas Batum was, like, making corner three after corner three after corner three.
Yeah.
And then they came back and played, like you mentioned, Isaiah Jackson had his career game, and they played quite a bit of zone in that one too, as I recall. And the Clippers had, like, I think that was at the end of their, like, Grammy road trip. I don't really remember, but it was a fun game. I liked it. I want to see the Clippers in, you know, full strength, which hasn't been the case for them. And if you get a chance to watch Paul George and Kawhi, you probably should do it. So I like that one as well. My pick for number three is going to be kind of astonishing given how the games went last year, but that's in part why I'm picking it. So I'm taking us to the end of January, January 29th at Memphis. I picked that one because the other game against Memphis that's at home is the second night of a back-to-back. So this one on the road, they're getting a day off in between after having played the Bucks. Last year, the Pacers didn't get to play against Ja Morant. Ja Morant's probably one of the most fun players in the NBA to watch. That's also, like, a really interesting matchup, I think, between, you know, he and Miles Turner. We don't really think about guards and centers as matchups, but, like, in terms of Jaw leading the league and paint points and getting 2 feet in the paint and what Miles Turner does as a rim protector, I think that's pretty fun to watch that back and forth. But also, like, two weaknesses that the Pacers had last year that kind of project to continue into next year are the antithesis of what the Memphis Grizzlies are. So last year, the Memphis Grizzlies were number one in offensive rebounding percentage and number one in transition frequency. The Pacers, after the trade deadline, were 25th in opponent offensive rebounding rate and last in transition frequency. And obviously, they lost both those games by, like, approximately, you know, 40 points apiece towards the back end of the season.
Awful.
And it was, it was like they were up against a buzzsaw, and predominantly for the reasons I just said, like, because the Pacers couldn't keep pace because they had to send guys to the glass. They're not good at preventing people from being on the offensive glass. So then they couldn't really get out and transition themselves. They could do nothing to stop the Grizzlies in transition, and Jaw wasn't even playing. So I think by the end of January, it's not like I'm expecting them to be competitive or something here. It's just, for me, I want to watch that game and see how are they going to answer either one of those two problems? It's not necessarily that it's going to be a fix, but like as the season goes on, that's past the midway point of the season. Have they found a solution for what they're going to be doing to be a better rebounding team? Have they found a way to be better at defending in transition? Because at a certain point in time, like you can look at it, like I think more and more NBA teams a little bit are starting to get a little bit more towards sending people to the offensive glass instead of doing like the old Boston Celtics where like nobody gets sent because you want to prevent transition opportunities. But like, if you're going to do that, which the Pacers were kind of close over the back end of the season, like, can you get more second chance points because they themselves were a good offensive rebounding team? Can you get more second chance points than you're giving up and fast break points? And what's that balance going to be for them? Because, you know, we do know that they tried to upgrade the athleticism of their own roster. I think that they want to get out and run. I'm guessing that Rick Carlisle's on board with that, given that the way that they drafted, does it play out? I think that's the perfect game to use as a measuring stick for that.
I like that answer. I did not have that one, but I do like that answer.
Cool. Okay. So we're getting close to the good games now. We're at number two.
Well, yeah, my number two, some would call it bad games. I think these are exciting games. You hit on it briefly earlier, and I have the Orlando back-to-back in November.
Okay.
I'm so excited for that. First, I mean, like, part of it is I'm, like, egregiously high on Orlando and who they're going to be as a team. I really love what their roster is. I think a lot of people be like, well, they don't have, like, a primary creator. I'm like, I don't care. They just have a lot of good basketball players. And again, like I just another young team, I would say that they're a little bit further ahead in what their roster building and development is than the Pacers are. But I think it's just another good opportunity, like you mentioned, like watching some matchups, seeing how they're able to shift in between games, game plan in between, and what that looks like. Just two teams that are pretty young that are both trying to be part of that next wave of good teams in the East. I'm excited for that, especially too, because I think what makes this so interesting, like they're kind of polar opposites in roster build in some ways. Like Orlando is huge. Like they can legitimately play three players who are all more four or fives, but they have the switchability, fluidity, mobility to, I just hit through every ITY word at you, but to legitimately just play extremely fluid. I don't like saying positionless basketball because there's still positions, but like, it just extremely fluid kind of amalgamous basketball with a ton of size. And the Pacers are going to run a lot of three guard lineups this year, I'd imagine. So it's just a very interesting blend of seeing how those two teams are going to play against one another. And I don't really have an answer for what quote unquote is better. I personally tend to lean more towards how Orlando is doing things, but I think that'll just be a really fun series to watch early on in the year.
Okay. Couple questions.
Yeah.
Number one off the top of my head, who on the Pacers roster defends Paolo Banchero?
Nobody. No, just kidding. That's a great question. Like, let me pull up the Pacers roster because I'm trying to think right now. I'm like, yeah, I don't like any of these answers. I think the problem is too, like, okay, when you have, I'm trying to think who I would even have defend Paolo, and I really don't have an answer.
I mean, it's probably going to have to be Jalen Smith in the starting lineup, is it not?
Yeah, and do you think that's going to go well?
I guess we'll see.
Yeah, I would be pretty mum on that. I think maybe you're just hoping, like, Ajax just, like, randomly turns into an all-world defender at that point. Even then, like, Powell's so strong. Mm-hmm. Like, see, that's what's so exciting about that Orlando team to me. Like, okay, cool. Yeah, you can have your 6'10 guy who's really long and athletic and makes good rotations and can play on the ball a little bit, play Paolo, but okay, cool. Who's going to guard Franz Wagner? Who's going to guard Wendell Carter Jr.? Like that front court is so intriguing to me.
Another question.
Yeah.
Okay, so if I told you Pistons, Pacers, Magic, which of those three do you think will make a playoff series first?
I would probably pick the Magic, to be honest.
I think I might lean that way too.
Just because, like, especially too, like, I don't want to say like they're quote unquote farther along in the rebuild, but they showed a lot more last year in terms of like, they were a top 10 defense in the second half of the year. And that wasn't just false. Like, they played really good defense against good teams too. The offense, again, going to be a work in progress, but Jalen Suggs is going to be better this year. I mean, he can't really be worse offensively than he was last year. Paolo, I mean, you and I have both talked about, like, I think Paolo's going to be so good. That team just makes a lot of sense to me as being better. I don't think they're going to be a title contender next year or anything, but if they win like 35 games and are in the play-in, I would not be surprised at all.
Today's episode is brought to you by Cars.com. With over 2 million vehicles and 50,000 more added every day, Cars.com will match you with the perfect car for you, your budget, your life, your style. And if you're ready to say goodbye to your current car, Cars.com will get you an instant offer to cash it in. Just start by entering your license plate and get matched with a local dealer who will write you the check. So whether you're looking to buy or sell, just go to Cars.com. It's magical.
Yeah, I mean, those two games that they played in Orlando, the Pacers played against them last year.
Remember when Gogo played like 45 seconds in that game? Yes. That was so random. What a time.
And then Chris Duarte had the toe thing. I think that's when he re-injured the toe and then he didn't play. But Brogdon had the good third quarter in the second one, and then they ended up going to overtime and Tyrese made the timeout signal. Like, those two games were fun. So, I mean, like I said, I'm totally here for the baseball series. I would have been here for us picking either one of the second games of those three, just because I like to watch the teams go back and forth and see what they're going to do. Mm-hmm. My pick for number two, people are going to think these lists that we've made are hilarious. Like, if they just saw the names of the teams that we picked, I picked the December 29th game against Cleveland.
Okay.
I picked that one because it is the 36th game of the season. So we're almost at the midway point. And a lot of my picks, I wanted to pick like schematic things that I knew that, like what I just did with the Memphis game, that I knew were somewhat problems for the Pacers, because I want to have a frame of reference for, you know, how have they solved this? Do they have a solve for this? So in Tyrese's first game that he played for the Pacers, they played the Cavs, and the Pacers got completely stymied in that fourth quarter by Jarrett Allen and Evan Mobley switching out. It really bothered them to get into offense. So if we're at the midway point of next season, it's Tyrese's first full season. I really want to see what he's going to do that many games into the year against Evan Mobley. Like, you have plenty of time to work through that as the season goes. And the other upside of picking this particular game is that if the Cavs win, it benefits the Pacers, because that just pushes them one step further to making the playoffs. So that's why I picked the Cavs game.
I like that. I really like that, especially too, like you mentioned, that was the game where it was super close to that game, wasn't it? And then the fourth quarter run was just absolutely nuts. Kevin Love had that like behind the back wraparound pass to the corner. That was a fun game to watch the Cavs. The Cavs vibes were so insane.
I mean, it's just wild point. When you watch it back to see how much they were trying to get away, like different things that they did. Like, I remember in that fourth quarter, it was the first time all year that I had seen Chris Duarte get a post touch, and to call it a post touch is a little bit of a stretch, because he was basically like posting at the 3-point line. And they effectively did that because every time Tyrese was getting a switch, or any of the guards were getting a switch, they couldn't get into the paint, or they were taking like wild layups against the two of those guys. So put Duarte in the post, and then made one of the two of them guard up top through a flare screen for Buddy. So it's kind of like what you just said against the Magic. Like, if you have Mathurin and you have Duarte out there, what types of creative things can you do against these teams with more size? Like, you know, when we were watching them in summer league and they were doing like a lot of blocker mover sets, can you run Duarte and Mathurin or Buddy or whoever it is out there through enough pin downs and flare screens that you're at least making those guys have to potentially work in uncomfortable ways? And also, like, can you get to the next action? Because earlier when I was talking about Detroit, that was part of the problem too for the Pacers towards the back end. It was very, you know, one and done. Like, we're getting this ball screen and we have this switch and we can't do anything against it. And maybe late in the clock, Tyrese is deferring to somebody else. Like, can you get to the next action? That's the type of stuff I want to see. So seeing it again, like what you're saying, this juxtaposition against size and the three guard lineups, I think all of that's pretty compelling.
Yeah. No, I really like that. Especially, I'm so excited to watch the Cavs play this year. I miss watching Cleveland Cavalier basketball.
When they were healthy.
Yeah. When they were healthy, for sure. They're going to be so interesting. Okay, where do I want to go with my last game?
Number one, a lot of pressure here.
I know. Like
number one was easy for me though. I was pretty prepared for number one. Yeah.
Okay. Well, number one for me is going to be the November 30th game against the Sacramento Kings.
Okay. I didn't pick that.
Is it strictly because I want to be on handshake watch? Who daps up who? You know, what does it look like when Domas comes back? But no, like in all sincerity, like
that game's in Sacramento.
Yeah, no, for sure.
Okay. You weren't talking about Sabonis coming back to Indiana. You want the road game.
Yeah, because it'll be just the first game that he's playing against Indiana. So I'm like,
yeah, that's true. That's true.
I really want to watch that one. I'm just kind of excited. Mainly because I'm like to keep myself in check. Like I think the Kings are. I mean, like I TBD because of like who is Mike Brown as a coach now. I'm interested to see what that looks like. I'm biased because I grew up as a kid in Cleveland, so the Mike Brown Cavs were like awesome. Mainly LeBron James was awesome. Those rosters were. It's so wild to look back at have you ever like just looked back at the starting lineup for the 07 Cavs in the finals? It is gross. It's actually gross. But yeah, I'm just excited to see the Kings play this team because I am really excited about the Kings this year, but just seeing Domas play again against them, a little bit of a revenge game for him, I suppose. Same thing for Tyrese, his first opportunity to play against the Kings after being traded. So I don't really care about it from a perspective of like, you know, revenge for either of them. I think it'll be a fun game. And like, again, like a cool juxtaposition to be like, you know, where are these both these teams at a month and a half into the year? Not that it's going to mean a ton, but I'm just interested to see how it plays out.
Okay. Cause this was on my honorable mention list because of what you just mentioned, that the Kings game at the end of the year last year was one of my favorite games of the year because like a lot of times it does get built. Like you said, you're not interested in the revenge aspect of it. Like a lot of times that's how these types of games get built, but we don't always look at it through the lens of, you know, not only do Tyrese and Buddy know what plays the Kings were running, especially last year, midway through the season, unless the Kings had made a lot of adjustments and terminology and whatnot, but that opponent knows Tyrese better than anybody. So when they came out and played that game, like Davion Mitchell was definitely invested in guarding Tyrese Halliburton. Like the Kings do not have a good defense, but you know, he is, you know, he can have some on ball defensive highlights all on his own. And they were weaking Tyrese on every single pick and roll and then switching out. And it was fun to watch what adjustments the Pacers made throughout the game, you know, starting to run actions for Tyrese to go to his left to combat that. Switching the way they were running some of those plays. And then Tyrese ended up with one of the only 15 assists, zero turnover games of the year. Didn't do quite as well from the field, but definitely did well from a playmaking standpoint. And I thought that was a really fun game to watch up until the point when Buddy dribbled the ball off his leg at the end. But as it turned out, that loss did kind of help the Pacers, even though the Kings ended up moving ahead of them in the lottery. At the draft lottery anyways. But yeah, I mean, I'm looking forward to watching the Kings. I want to see Keegan play with Sabonis and with Harrison Barnes and how they're going to integrate Kevin Huerter as well. I think there's a lot you can do with him and Sabonis. So I think both teams have the potential to be fun. The only reason I didn't pick it is because I'm absolutely dreading the Tarbonis narratives that will be born out of that game. Like, I don't know if I can tolerate that. Like the one game takes we're going to have from however the two of them match up and play against each other, unless Miles isn't on the roster anymore. So that was the reason that I had to sub that one out. I will say, like, I cannot believe that neither of us picked as another honorable mention DeAndre Ayton's homecoming. When the Suns play,
long-time Pacer.
There could be a tribute video for those 2 minutes when he was a Pacer. I mean, there's a lot of contributions made there. And also, my other one that I almost picked that I will give a shout out to, the November 4th game against the Miami Heat is of interest to me for some several reasons, but also like just to make another narrative game. Victor Oladipo hasn't played back in Bankers Life Fieldhouse yet. He did have a very interesting tweet that he has since deleted a few weeks ago. I don't know if you saw the tweet.
I did see the tweet.
Yeah, like he's since deleted it, but kind of mentioned that like I thought there was some revisionist history in the tweet, and I also don't think that the circumstances between he and Paul George and Sabonis and the way that they were no longer on the team were really at all comparable, but you know, he kind of seemed to be shifting some of the onus onto the Pacers front office and what we have said in the past, like there probably is quite a bit of gray area between, you know, some of these the guys who have most recently been all-stars for the Pacers just absolutely wanting out no matter what, and what the team's doing for star retention. So not necessarily that he's clearly not playing at an all-star level anymore, but we haven't seen him play at Gainbridge yet since he was traded to the Rockets and since then moved to the Heat and re-signed with the Heat. So I also think just schematically that the Heat are kind of interesting. Those two games were really telling and kind of, I mean, what both of us thought, like the one home game, that was the turning point for me where I was like, this isn't going anywhere. Like that was when I was ready to pull the plug on what the old version of this Pacer team was. Like, I just felt like frustrations were boiling over. They could do nothing against the zone. The spacing was horrible. And I was like, yeah, this needs to be done. And then within the week, it was like getting reported that they were shopping all those guys. But my actual number one pick, just to shout out the honorable mentions, my actual number one pick, the October 24th game against the Philadelphia 76ers. That's going to be the first road game of the year after the three game kind of soft start to the schedule. They're going to be on a 5-game road trip pretty early in the season. And we have not since at all last year, Miles and Joel Embiid did not play against each other. So the two of them have not played against each other since Joel Embiid last said, quote, "I say this respectably, that's a matchup that I have dominated since I got into the league." And the numbers support that claim. Miles had made some comments prior to the last one that, like, if he is who he is, like, he can do something against the matchup. It's not even so much just Miles versus Embiid for me as much as will it be Miles versus Embiid for me if he's still on the roster. The Sixers obviously have Melton, they have Daniel House now, they have PJ Tucker. Like, to me, there's a lot more flexibility of what they can do defensively across that roster than what they've had in the past. So given what we know of what's been, you know, somewhat Tyrese's struggles and hip and shoulder wars against length when guys switch out to him, and what we know of can be somewhat Miles's weaknesses, I'm kind of interested to see, like, in lineups when PJ Tucker might be out there with Embiid, like, will they cross match that? That's something that I want to see very early in the year, or how are teams willing to defend that? So I think that there's a chance that we might see PJ Tucker guarding Miles Turner in that game and Joel Embiid guarding Jalen Smith, unless Jalen Smith is shooting the lights out of the ball. Because in the last, toward the end of last season, when the Pacers played the back-to-back against the Sixers, they did that. They put Joel Embiid on Terry Taylor and had him sag off, and then had other guys in the screening action with Jalen Smith as the role man. So I kind of want to see, like, if they are going to be doing the switching on cross matches with Miles Turner as your primary screener, what are you going to do against that? Is Tyrese going to be able to get into the paint against a guy like PJ Tucker on a switch? Will Miles post up the switch of whoever was originally guarding Tyrese? And if they come in double, what's he going to do about that? Because I imagine that in pick and rolls that involved Joel Embiid, like if he is guarding Jalen and then they were to go for Jalen as a screener, they'll probably still predominantly use Embiid and drop. But I think that all of those particular things, particularly from the cross match stand up that I've mentioned in the past, because prior to the last time Miles was officially the starting five, they basically never had Embiid guarding him full time. Ben Simmons would guard Miles and they would put Joel Embiid on Thaddeus Young. So just 4 games into the year, I think that that will be a good measuring stick for the Halliburton and Miles Turner pairing if it actually becomes a thing.
No, I like that. I think that's a really good point to bring up. That's one I hadn't actually thought through like that. So I am a big fan of that one. I think it also just brings me to the point of, I'm just so ready for Miles to be on a different team, as is Miles. I don't like having to think about this all the time.
Well, because I mean, I was thinking the other day, like, not to completely derail our podcast, but like I was looking at where the depth chart would be and thinking about who would play where. And I don't like having to think about, like, well, what will maximize trade value? Yeah. Like, and not that that can't be any of your thought process. And obviously you do want the Pacers, if they do decide to move Miles or Buddy Hield, to get a good return. But it's like, I didn't like that my thinking was, well, they probably need to start Buddy because of how he performed as a starter last year. Maybe Chris Duarte will get more touches if he's, you know, sixth man off the bench. Like, I'm kind of tired of having to think through those types of games. And just like this right here, thinking about, like, well, who would need to play with Miles at the four so that type of a cross match wouldn't happen? Because obviously, like, if you are bringing Miles back predominantly for the purpose of recouping his trade value, because at this point, again, like, I know there was shenanigans between, like, what Bob Kravitz had reported and Miles having a tweet and other stuff. Like, I don't really care about any of that up until the point, unless somebody tells me that he's going to sign an extension, nothing about my opinion changes. Mm-hmm. If he's not going to sign an extension, then the Indiana Pacers need to move him. You can't risk him walking for nothing. So if the beginning of the season is about, you know, recouping his value, I don't know how much I like that, like having to tilt tons of offense to try to prop up, you know, what he's been in the past. But also just thinking through stuff like this, like, well, who needs to be out there so that he can be defended by Joel Embiid and potentially shoot in space or, you know, other stuff. So I see where you're coming from with that. But I guess my thought is if they are bringing him back, I want to see ways that they can be competitive doing it, like if that's the goal.
Mm-hmm.
No, that totally makes sense. I'll can I be completely honest with you?
Mm-hmm.
I do not like schedule release day.
I don't really either. That's like, why I wanted to do this more subjective exercise.
I was very happy to do a pod together, but like schedule release day hits yesterday, and part of it helps that I'm like working in the WNBA right now, so I'm still focused on basketball without being focused on this basketball. But like, I'm just like, guys, it's August 17th. Like, I'm not in the capacity right now to be worrying about what's going on in October, you know, but
it's not even just so much that is, it's more just like an Outlook calendar booking. Like,
yeah,
that's why I didn't want to like totally break down a schedule, especially for where the team is at right now. But I did think it would be fun just to pick out what we thought might be fun games. So hopefully people enjoyed this exercise, especially when I look now at my top five games written in here in ink. And just listen to this, Mark. My top five games are the Wizards, the Cavs, the Pistons, the Grizzlies, and the Sixers.
Hey, that's, I mean, that's...
It sounds funny to me.
Yeah, it's certainly a group of teams. So, yeah, I think that's good.
I had reasons for them. I imagine they're not going to be reasons that other people have when they pick their top five games, but...
Same, but I'm pretty pumped about it. I can't complain. We had pretty similar. I mean, I had Orlando up there too, so it's not like... it's not anything crazy. But I'm excited for it. I think it's gonna be good. So I'm looking forward to the season. I'm looking forward to all the chats we get to have on here about it. I had some Ohio slander.
I do have some Ohio slander. So since we last chatted, I ventured across the border into Ohio for reasons that I won't get into. But I was in Ohio and I have since developed a new obsession with a new frozen treat. So
I wonder what you were in Ohio for.
I don't want to completely say what I was in Ohio for. But the reason that I'm upset and need to slander Ohio right now is that I went to McDonald's while I was over there, because I don't know if you know this in the part of Ohio that you're in, but here in Indiana where I live, McDonald's now has frozen Sprite lemonades.
What?
Okay. So you know that I like the Giannis 50-50. You're aware
of
this.
Yeah, of course.
So like the actual like pop that's Sprite lemonade, they've turned into an icy. And McDonald's sells this and it is fantastic. Like, I can't tell you how many of these I've purchased. So I was on the road in Ohio and I was thirsty. I was like, heck yeah, there's McDonald's. I'm going to go get a frozen Sprite lemonade. I wait all the way through a very long line, get to the speaker. I'm like, I want a large frozen Sprite lemonade. They're like, we don't have that. Basically, what are you talking about? I'm like, I just waited like 20 minutes in the drive through and you don't even have this. So I was just like, okay, I don't need anything. So I leave. I drive to the next McDonald's in Ohio and they do not have it either. So apparently this has not come to Ohio. Have you seen it where you are at in Ohio?
I'll be completely honest, Caitlin. I can't remember the last time I went to McDonald's.
Well, I only went there because there was ads for this. Like there was billboards in Indiana, like come try the new frozen Sprite lemonade. And I was like, of course I will try that. I mean, I'm your target audience. So I drove to McDonald's. That's the only reason I go there. But I was in Ohio trying to get myself one of these refreshing beverages, and apparently it hasn't come to Ohio, and I really blame you for that.
Well, it is indeed my fault. Maybe
your
if I'd gone
fault
to
for sure.
Maybe if I'd gone to McDonald's, I would have known. But I will say, the west side of Ohio, like what area of Ohio were you in?
Yeah, I was on the west side of it.
Okay, so like Toledo area?
No.
Ish.
I don't want to reveal where I was at, Mark.
Oh, I'm just trying to contemplate. Okay, well, in fairness, if you go south of Toledo on the west side of Ohio, there is not shit there. So I cannot speak to the efficacy of, you know, like London, Ohio McDonald's, but
I really do like Columbus, Ohio.
Columbus is awesome.
I go to their zoo. I like it.
Yeah, I lived in Columbus for a while and I loved it there. I actually have contemplated moving back, but that's a big TBD. But yeah, point being, when you're in Cleveland is like, and it's big and there's a suburban sprawl, but then you get like 10 minutes south of where I live and it's just straight fields and Amish country until you get to Columbus, 2 hours away. And then you go, it's same thing, suburban sprawl in Columbus. And then you go south to the west for about 2.5 hours before you get to Dayton. And there's really nothing in between. And then that's the exact same thing when you go north from Dayton all the way up to Toledo. So again, you can't hold it against the entire state.
I've actually never been to Cleveland. I've been to Dayton. I like Columbus better. Cincinnati. I've been to Columbus. I've actually never been up to Cleveland before. But I do think it's funny that you're like describing Ohio as like there being all these fields in Amish country as if that isn't what a big portion of Indiana is. So,
well, yeah, but no, fair enough.
But I do think that you need to report back to me and tell me if you see any billboards for the frozen Sprite lemonade anywhere in Ohio, because if you don't, I'm going to feel bad for you because I know that you like ices and I feel like you would really like this.
Oh, I guess I should.
I feel strongly about it. But another thing that we have to bring up, I don't know if you saw it, but I was rightfully called out and checked by our listeners because when I did my last popsicle ranking, there was a popsicle I hadn't tried. So that might have had something to do with why I was in Ohio. We can't completely say, but I had not tried the cherry pop. So not the cherry fruit bar, the cherry popsicle. There's a variety pack where you get tangerine, grape, and cherry in a box. And it's kind of like raspberry. The only way you can get the raspberry is if you buy the lemonade or the lemon, lime, and raspberry box. So I had to go find these cherry popsicles. I got them. I am going to be honest with you, Mark. I don't like cherry really anything except for cherry pie. That's like,
wow, we are so different.
Yeah, I don't like cherry. So I went into it with very low expectations, but I told the person who called me out that I would keep an open mind and that there aren't any losers when it comes to Outshine popsicles. So I got them. I tried it on a Sunday morning. I took a picture of it to document and prove that I tried it. I'm telling you what, it wasn't bad. Like, I did not mind it. I don't know if you've had the cherry, but I'm not going to redo my entire ranking, but I will say that it ranks above tangerine, it ranks above lime, and it ranks above watermelon. And I don't
picture
even like
you
cherry.
Having this giant whiteboard next to you. Similarly to, like, I have a giant whiteboard to write all my stuff out that I need to do. I just have a feeling that you have this giant whiteboard that is constantly shifting and evolving rankings of Outshine popsicles.
Well, I mean, people rely on us for this, Mark. They listen and they base their purchases on this. And I will say, too, that I really like, I already like the grape ones. We already know that I ranked those in the top three, but the grape pops, I ate three of those in one night.
Jesus. I had two of the lime in one day and I actually felt kind of sick to my stomach. So I've tried to refrain.
I don't see how that's possible. Well, the lime's intense. Their lime's intense, but I just had one grape one. I was like, wow, that was really good. Got another grape one. I was like, I could probably still have the last one. They only put three grape in the variety pack. Like, it was supposed to be an even mix, but there was only three. So I was like, I'm going to eat these. But
that's how they get you.
Anyways, yeah, we've now fulfilled the needs of the people, telling them, I'm recommending to you, go to McDonald's if you're in Indiana. If you're lucky enough to be in Indiana and not Ohio, go to McDonald's and get the frozen Sprite lemonade. And of course, always eat an Outshine popsicle. I think soon enough, you and I will be starring in Outshine commercials instead of the Kinetico ads during Pacer games.
Yes. Well, I think if anybody's going to make it happen, I think there's a chance we can make the Outshine on TV happen. So let's see.
I mean,
see
there
happens.
Were, I don't know if you noticed, but there was Outshine commercials randomly during the NBA playoffs. I had never seen that in my life. And like during playoff games, there was Outshine popsicle ads.
Most improved player next year?
Yeah, I mean, I don't see why not.
It's very possible. Well, Caitlin, this was an absolute blast. I will be on the lookout for that Sprite lemonade ice concoction. I'll see if I can will myself to drive through McDonald's.
Look at the food.
I'm not
just
gonna
ignore
lie.
The food.
McDonald's did sound kind of good to me yesterday. I had like a really intense workout, and I got done. And I'm like, I could make something, or I eat McDonald's. I ended up making something because I didn't feel like driving anywhere. But point being, very much in the same boat. But Caitlin, this was an absolute blast. To everyone listening, if you haven't already, go read Caitlin's newest article. It was very good. I have not gotten to read it yet, but I know that it's very good. It is on
just
my
blind confidence, just blind confidence.
I always have blind confidence in you. It is on my to-do list to read it. Caitlin, I promise I'm not just bullshitting. I have been like the last couple of weeks have just been a lot time wise. So I am very much looking forward to actually getting to take a break and read this. But thank you to everyone for listening. And most importantly, have a good rest of your day.